Now we're gonna record. Okay, D, I just hit record and you just walked away. So for those of you, welcome to my interview with Drisana Carey. She is one of my long time bestie soul sisters friends. And so for everyone who will watch this in the future or listen to this, I am really excited to introduce to you. She is a soul sister, and I consider your family my family, whether they want me there or not.
Of course they do.
And you're part of my family, whether you want to be. No, I'm joking. This is all consensual here, folks. We're all about respecting. So Drisana, I had to hit record real quick because what you'll hear is she has an amazing way with words. And so Drisana, what were you just saying when I said, stop, I need to hit record? You started with the book and your nose breathing. So catch us up.
Yes, yes. I think you actually had to pause me twice.
Yeah.
So I was prefacing this. First of all, thank you for the beautiful introduction. And of course, my heart is totally invested in you and your family, and you are absolutely part of my family. And I love the connection that we have. And most, like, I think that one of the strong bonds of our connection, one of the major tethers, is that we love to geek out on things that are enriching for our lives. And we've really made it our profession to just geek out and enjoy enriching our lives in these meaningful ways. And so that shared connection, that shared passion for evolving and for, just heart-first living with a strong, hefty dose of intellectual geekiness has just added so much fuel to the fire of our connection, and I so appreciate that. So
you're gonna make me cry because I miss you so much, and then yes, yes.
Oh, it's so good to see you. I love it.
Oh, you too, friend. Yes. Yeah, so this conversation we're about to have is not unusual, right? Like the whole reason I was like, Drisana, we just need to record this because when we get together, our conversations, yes, after we do the 15-minute catch up of, you know, the basic, we jump in. It's just jumping in. So let's just jump in.
Totally.
Tell me about what you were sharing about this book that inspired you, the title, the author, how it connects with your passion with tea and living and heart first living. Let's get in.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, of course, there's never just one book. So the first one that the purpose for this conversation was the book Breathe or Breath by James Nestor. And what I love about this book is that, you know, you and I are both yoga instructors. We are Chinese medical doctors. We have been working in holistic health for more than a decade now. And I think it's a universal known truth that the breath is such a basic, fundamental part of living a full, healthy lifestyle. And it can also go unnoticed. And even for those of us who practice pranayama and teach all of our clients how to breathe, this book by James Nestor was beautiful because he sacrificed himself to show the difference between breathing through his nose and breathing through his mouth. Hmm. And there are so many other intricacies and messages and incredible takeaways from the book. But one of the biggest things that I took away from it was when I'm talking, I oftentimes will breathe through my mouth. And if I really focus on breathing through my nose, it creates these kind of awkward, for me, awkward pauses. Maybe they're not awkward for other people, but for me, it's like, I'm normally talking there, but I just took a breath through my nose. Okay, this is kind of funny. And having that little edge touched in a way that helps to enhance the way my physiology, the way that my body is connecting with the present moment, I see these little nuggets of healthful changes as the little sparks of life. And I have noticed some really wonderful differences since then. I'll get into that probably later. But what it reminded me of is another thing that I've become rather passionate about really rather recently within the past 2 years is tea. And in the practice of a Zen style tea ceremony, it's focused on a space first living versus a content driven living. Society, we are very content driven. We like to fill, we see a void on a wall and we're like, ooh, what could I put there? Can I put a picture there? Man, this is a really nice, beautiful table. What can I put on it?
Yes.
The space first living is looking at the space and recognizing that beautiful space and honoring it with stillness, with presence. And that silent nose breathe for me is that reminder of, oh yes, space first.
That is so beautiful, because I was so excited to say, how can a book connect with a tea ceremony, right? Mm-hmm. Other than, you know, it's a Zen book and a tea ceremony, that would be like too, you know, like that'd be too easy. So I love it. Yeah. When we come from, what I hear you saying is when we come from space in our breath for ourselves, like us, we say it all the time, but when we walk our talk, when we live in that space that we create with our mind and put our breath and our body in that same space of intention, we become the embodied space. We become the tea ceremony. We become the tea ceremony.
That is exactly it.
And so then when, so as a client, so you're in the clinic a lot more than I am. And oh, wait, okay, let's do an introduction. Okay. Because I know where you are. Where are you currently right now? I know where you are, but where are you currently right now?
Currently, I am in Vail, Colorado.
But where do you spend other time?
Yes. My life is based in Leucadia, California, in San Diego.
So like North County, San Diego.
North County, San Diego. My practice is in Solana Beach. I have this amazing setup where I have a duplex, where I have an apartment upstairs and a practice downstairs. Yeah.
The dream.
It's dreamy. It's super dreamy. I love it. And a little garden out back. And it's truly what I've dreamed of for a long time.
You're a pretty powerful manifester too, my friend. But, so when you say practice, what does that look like for you?
So my acupuncture practice is definitely multidimensional. Mm-hmm. I've been a yoga instructor for over 15 years now. And I have geeked out in, I think it's 5 different postural alignment practices.
Yeah. I didn't even know how to introduce, like, I didn't even know what, like how to put a title behind your name, because right. I was like, master of the universe. I don't know. Superwoman, Wonder Woman.
I'm sure I humbly don't live up to all of those titles, but I'm a seeker. I'm definitely a seeker. And so I have sought out what I have seen as masters in anatomy and physiology and biomechanics. And my background is in sports. And so I started in sports medicine, and I have quickly dove through many different tunnels and found craniosacral and all kinds of different practices. So, and I have phenomenal mentors who are very patient with my unending questions and advice, and they're so generous with their times. It's amazing. So my practice doesn't look like a typical acupuncture practice. I think the most common thing I hear from a first time client is, I've never had acupuncture like this before. This isn't just acupuncture. And I do, so I get to work, since I work for myself, I am my own boss. I get to tailor my sessions the way I like to be able to tailor them, which is to the person that walks through the door. So I'm not a typical, like, I maybe have 2 rooms going at once, but almost never. So I really appreciate the freedom to be able to meet someone, and they may have come in for an acupuncture treatment, but we end up doing a 45-minute yoga therapy treatment and talking about nutrition. And then we get on the table for 20 minutes or so. And it turns out that that's exactly what that person needed.
I love it.
So it's great. The flexibility is really important, and the alignment to what is this person really interested in receiving right now, and what are they ready to receive? And then I always like to give them I was a high jumper in college, like to raise the bar just a little higher, just to see if they want to jump over it.
Oh yeah.
A little more to
the edge. Like, would you consider that the same term as like in, because most of the people who are going to listen to this, I'm going to say have a background in a yoga studio, whether they actually practice yoga or more fitness or it's a spiritual path for them. But we talk about the edge a lot. So when you say raising the bar, you kind of, is that a good synonym?
Finding the edge. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Finding the edge in a practice where you're just on that border of comfort and discomfort, but you know, you're not in a detrimental place for your body, but you know, it may not be that comfortable because you're finding that new line of possibilities.
Oh my gosh. So this totally ties in. At least this is how my brain is putting it together. What you just said about at the very beginning, how nose breathing at times you think of it as feeling a little awkward. Mm-hmm. Is that one of your edges then?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that's, I love it. So yeah. Okay. The rabbit hole just opened up for us, but I'm just super excited to dive into everything. I mean, I'm sure this will all weave together in some magical way. It always does. And if it doesn't, we can continue to have these conversations and one day maybe it will, maybe not. And I'm okay with that too. You know, one of the things that you introduced me to this book, hopefully I get this right. Donna Hicks. Okay. The Leading With, yeah. So you introduced me to it and I could only get my hands on, it was her second book, Leading With Dignity. But you actually kept telling me, you have to read this book, Dignity. You just have to, you have to. And I think for years you told me to, and I finally did while I was in Okinawa. And what did I do? Immediately I'm texting you, blowing you up like, I can't believe I waited so long. And we just geek out and talk about the rabbit hole that all opened up to, because as it turned out, a year later ends up being like, this year, 2020, and it seems like the whole world and universe kind of like opened up in a myriad of ways, and all we could keep coming back to, I mean, besides our own rabbit holes and our own experiences with it, is, wow, this book, this model of dignity that she proposes is so appropriate more than ever before. Mm-hmm. So for those who've never heard the book, can you tell us like just a little bit of maybe how it found you or how you found it, and then like why you were so passionate about making sure I read this book too.
My pleasure. So, you know, to be honest, I don't remember who introduced me to it or how I stumbled upon it. But I remember when I read the first, she has this overview in her introduction, and it grabbed me right away. And so I was in school. I was at getting a master's degree in acupuncture and oriental medicine. And I'd been studying yoga and the sutras and the yamas and the niyamas and all of these things. And I guess I have a natural curiosity about how do I put it? Virtue and living a life of virtue and keeping a strong, humble perspective. So when I find sources that have great content in that area, I tend to be very interested. And right away, so Donna Hicks was a conflict resolution specialist for, I think it was over two decades. She traveled all over the world and she was working on obviously resolving conflict and helping to support more peaceful negotiations and discourse.
And like at very high levels, right? Like we're talking for like United States. Yeah.
The government. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So she's working with Desmond Tutu. They're working in Northern Ireland. They're working all over the world and in the most critical places. And she starts this story about a country in South America. She doesn't name which country she's in, where there's warring factions that they're not even communicating. And she's supposed to be facilitating a workshop on communication. And the president of the region is there just to say hi, and then he's going to go back to his office for meetings. And when she meets him, she says, "You know what? What I realize is going on here. It looks to me that there's a complete breakdown of dignity, and the violations are so egregious that there won't be the groundwork to be able to have a communications workshop. So what I would like to propose is to scrap that and to have a workshop on dignity." And he said, "Cancel my day, I'm staying." And at the end of that, I think it was a 2 or 3 day workshop, people that wouldn't even look her in the eye whether it was because she was a woman or because they didn't want to be in a room with the people that they had, you know, lifelong hatred for, they came up to her and said, thank you so much. Not only can I see that there's going to be beneficial progress in what we're discussing, but you just affected my marriage deeply. You just affected my life deeply. And it's these principles that when they are truly embodied and modeled and constantly revisited, they, for me, are the beacons that our society and our as individuals, we need to hold true in order to see a new reality. And you so beautifully described how 2020, it opened up, and it truly did. It was almost, for me, it was truly almost like a lotus. Is it? The muck was there.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. Yeah.
2020 really opened up the vulnerabilities of like, okay, here's what's really present. Here is the gross discrimination. Here is the gross lack of virtue in our leadership. Here is the gross misrepresentation. Here's the just dignity violations across the board. But it was also a beautiful display of like, all right, if we have tools to be able to start to mend the wounds, to heal, then we can actually start to do something. And for me, this book lays out so clearly, and I know you express this too, it almost turns spiritual. I mean, she's a very pragmatic, she's a diplomat. and it echoes so many other spiritual texts that I've read before that have so much value in my life. And I so appreciate the ability to bridge some concrete, they're simple subjects that can go so as deeply as you want to go and really start to facilitate some phenomenal changes.
Yeah, because what you point out is so true. Like we have a choice whether we want to stay in the mud and to wallow in it and cover ourselves in it and, you know, like whatever we want to do in it. We have that choice. That's that human will part of us, right? Or we use that mess as an opportunity to turn into the lotus. It's so, I love, you know, I share that with my kids all the time. That's like one of the first quotes they ever learn, no mud, no lotus. Because to me, it's just like, it's just one of those quotes I wish that I'd learned it when I was 2 or 3 years old, you know, subconsciously planted back there, because it took me a long time to recognize that. And I've shared this with you, that for probably the first 10 years of my yoga practice, I used my yoga practice as a spiritual bypassing tool to avoid the dirt, to not be real with what was actually drawing me to the mat. I was saying, oh, it was drawing me to the mat because I like the Shavasana. I like the feel good. I like the aftermath, right? And so that's what I kept running to until about 10 years in, where I realized I was masking. Like I was using it as a crutch to really be real with, I just wanted the lotus. But at a certain point, this is the science of these beautiful practices, whether it's Chinese medicine or Ayurveda or yoga or whatever our lives have been drawn to, is that you can keep your eye on the lotus. You can pretend you're the lotus, but you can never be the lotus unless you come from the muck, unless you know your roots, unless you know the mud in which you're growing from. And it was like, you know, 10 years into it, and I was teaching and leading workshops and everything, where I realized, oh my God, I've been totally using this to bypass the real work here. And that's when I learned that term. You know, I really dove into the text again, but coming from a place of not looking for all the secret messages, but how do I use this like practical knowledge to turn into the lotus rather than just like idolize the lotus, right? And so, yeah, the yamas, the niyamas all of a sudden became like, oh, this is where you start. And this model of dignity that you shared was what I loved about it, is I finally had words that I could talk to Tad. You know, like, because when I start saying yamas, niyamas, yoga, I mean, he keeps his heart open because he knows I'm interested in it, but he shuts down. Like, you can tell when someone's listening, right? But when I started using words from her book, right, she's coming from diplomat policymaking. I just pulled this up before we jumped on. Like, one of her 10, right, ways of, because dignity is not just defined as like one way, right? It's right. It's about embracing all of our humanities. And then she actually breaks it down, like, how do we practice dignity? How do we reflect on our own dignity? When do we know when it's broken, et cetera? And one of them is just like having our identity accepted no matter who we are. Mm-hmm. Boom! Like, talk about nonviolence. You know, like if I say ahimsa and Tad's going, but I say that, all of a sudden he opens up to a conversation that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to have. And so coming back to what you're saying, like, in order to even communicate, and this is someone that adores and respects and loves me, but if that's at the most personal level, that there's a lack of listening or a lack of communicating because of just the language we choose. Mm-hmm. Like, she's really narrowed it down to a way of someone who might not be interested in yoga, Chinese medicine, etc., and yet still brings that same power and impact of where energy and matter come together, right? Where intention and then our actions meet.
Beautifully stated. Yeah.
So how have you used this? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say there's a light of truth, and that light of truth is the same. To me, it's the same vibration, no matter what language it's spoken in. And whether it's the yamas or the niyamas, or it's dignity model, or it's foundation training or yoga, like there are so many different beams of, or different, yeah, how do I put it? That same light of truth is present in all of those different ways. So we can be saying the same thing in different languages, and it may, and you may hear it 15 times in these 15 different languages until you hear it in that 16th language. And it's like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, and it may be just that timing or whatever, but it's oftentimes the language. And that's what I appreciate, because for me, the yamas, when I first learned them, were a little nebulous. They weren't, there was clarity, but there wasn't a specificity that allowed me to really hold myself to the flame. That makes sense.
Yeah. Accountability.
Right. That accountability, there was so much latitude, I guess, that with the nebulous way that I interpreted the yamas originally. Mm-hmm. And as my practice has deepened and as I've gathered more experience and I've dove deeper into myself and had more revelations and gone through, you've seen my progress through this too. You've talked about, you know, recognizing 10 years in that, like, oh my gosh, I'm escaping some of the real grit here. Yeah, it was probably around 10 years into my practice that there was like the just this dark time, and it was like, what is this? What?
How do you get out of this? What happened to all this love and light?
Here, and so there have been these. Yeah, these true alignments with walking that path, even when there wasn't a strong, bright light orienting. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed is that for me, I appreciate having different language, having a different mind, digest these truthful principles of life, of value, of worth, of worthiness, and spit them out in different ways. And the way that Donna Hicks lays out, and we should probably go through the 10 points of dignity, because I appreciate that so many people, when you say dignity, everyone knows that word. It's so easy to say, well, yes, of course, I recognize people with dignity. But when you ask someone to define it, what does dignity mean? So often people use the word respect. And she says this too. Well, it means dealing with someone with respect. Well, no, respect. Someone has to earn your respect. There are many people in this world that I will treat with dignity that do not have my respect.
Oh, snaps. Well said.
I couldn't have said that before I read this book. I would have said the same thing probably.
Yeah.
Respect and dignity are totally intertwined. They're totally separate. And how they're separate is largely laid out by these 10 points.
Yeah.
Acceptance of identity, the first one that you just said. That's huge. Yeah. Recognizing someone for who they identify as being, not as who we identify them as being, but accepting their own definition of their identity. So therein lies another opportunity for each individual to really, well, what is my identity? And we can get really deep and spiritual in this.
Yeah. Like you said, she may be using very fundamental concepts or like, but they're bridging that light of the subtle, the spiritual with the human experience.
Totally. Yeah. And inclusion. That's the second point of dignity. Being mm-hmm. inclusive to everyone. And this gets really tricky. I'm in Vail, Colorado right now, going on a mountain. And this is, my mom is head of the board of the Ski Industries of America, Snow Sports Industries of America. And they're working strongly on inclusion right now. And there's a fundamental difficulty with that because of socioeconomic statuses. You can say, welcome, come on in. By the way, it's $229 to get on the mountain.
For a day. Yeah. Like, plus all the gear and how do you do that? How do you bridge that?
And it's interesting because I lived in France for almost a year, and skiing in France, you don't see these star-spangled, like bright, shining, glimmering resorts like Aspen and Vail. Everything's pretty blue collar. The ticket for entry was like $20. Like I got a whole season pass where I think it was like $150. That was a bus taking us to a
mountain. I can't even imagine.
It's a very different culture. And the culture is very centered around everyone should have the opportunity, truly. And there shouldn't, why would you want to be a millionaire? That's just weird in the French culture.
Yeah.
It's totally counter to inclusion. They're much more focused on, now, not to say that French is the perfect culture that doesn't have any animosity or any resentment or any racism or anything. Of course, everyone has their fallibilities and their vulnerabilities, but there's a different orientation towards treating nature, and everyone has access to it. And it's, so inclusion is the second one. Safety is the third one. And pause me if you want to jump in here.
No, go. I was just going to ask you, I'm so happy that you have these to you, because I was going to pull them up real quick, glad you have them right there. No, go for it. This is, you're just so much food for thought.
Totally. And then
especially given 2020, I'm glad we're doing this now, because this conversation we're even having, it looks so different than back in May, and June and July and all those other conversations.
Totally. Well, we're in a healing process as a culture, as a humanity. And truly, I don't even know if we've entered in the healing process. We're still getting beat up.
Yeah, that's how I feel. It's like we need to be aware of that we're still in the mud. Yeah, and we can't begin to grow until we recognize the soil we've tended to.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just want to value and honor this space right now, because they're... I know that with our our production content first oriented mind, and we are doers as Americans, and I so appreciate that. But it can also hold us back from the being part and just truly being with what is present and being with the reality of just how much violence and how many violations have been going on consciously or subconsciously for all of us. Doesn't matter who you are. If you're living in this country and you've been subjected to all of our systems, and we have been involved in these violations, whether we've been perpetrators unknowingly or we've been victims unknowingly, or we've just been consuming it because it's been around our environment. And simply allowing the space to be present in that uncomfortable, in that truth, before we start to try to fix it or to move out of it. It's so important to have that level of acceptance. And I truly want to honor that. And I know there's no sand hour clock just ticking down. Now it's going to be
done. When is it going to be done? When can I start? When can I move forward? Right?
Someone prides themselves on being an independent entrepreneurial, I want to start moving towards, but at the same time, there's just a constant reminder to come back to just immersing myself in these 10 different levels of awareness. So that was, one was acceptance of identity, two is inclusion, three is safety, four is acknowledgement. And I so appreciate acknowledgement, especially in the context of the yamas, because acknowledgement to me, I think, is one of the easiest bridges to yoga, because full acknowledgement is full presence. It's being.
Say that again.
Full acknowledgement is full presence. Listening. Hearing. Validating. Taking in and being the receptacle. So the imbalance, I know you and I have talked about this many times, but there, in my opinion, there has been a rather gross yin-yang imbalance in our culture. We tend to be much more yang-oriented. Mm-hmm. And being more yin-oriented, moving into Chinese medical speak, but allowing ourselves to be receptive and to be nurtured and nurturing. And for me, acknowledgement, the way she defines it and the way I'm interpreting it, is really truly learning how to be fully present and to listen without an agenda, without what's my rebuttal going to be, how does my identity interpret this, but truly just simply being present and listening, whether it's to someone or to a state.
And what about even to ourselves? Exactly. Like the voice we ignore within ourselves that's telling us the truth, but we're like, I've got to-do list to accomplish. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Totally.
Yeah, like this year has given us a really big opportunity to be with our stuffs, plural, not just one thing, but all of the different ways that it reflects back.
Absolutely. And yoga is such a beautiful platform. Like you said, 10 years in, you notice that, oh my gosh, I've been just reaching for the beautiful lotus. And I can attest, when I first started yoga, first 3-4 years, I needed to be the best person in the room. I was the most athletic. I was the most flexible. I was the strongest. All of the things.
I can't imagine that.
It was like, oh, that person has their leg higher. Well, I can get my leg higher. Like, and just rocking my body.
I can totally see that now. Like, I mean, I know you don't impact it that way now, but I can see how that would have been like.
And of course it's all on the path, right? I'm so grateful for that time,
yeah,
because I'm so grateful for my competitive nature that's in the background and like it's underneath there. It can come out when it needs to, but truly now I'm finding that such depth of value in truly having, I mean, it has been years of uncovering those layers of self-worth, of defining my identity, of all of these things that like being cute in the yoga clothes and having the perfect body, whatever, being a yoga model for 5 years.
Like, oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's so much like that I'm grateful for, to have the practice, which you alluded to this earlier, the like being in the practice will constantly just take off another layer and take off another layer and take off another layer. And it's just, it's such a powerful and enriching experience that allows for a depth and a new understanding of acknowledgement, a new understanding of full presence. And it's like you get new eyes. For me, I get new eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's number four, recognition. Number five. I mean, these are just, I get giddy every time I get to talk about these because they're just these beautiful gifts that you give, you can give yourself, and then you can share that with people around you.
Yeah.
And
it's in a language we can really, really in our own language understand. Like if English is your first language, all of a sudden, like we don't need to try to dissect Pinyin Chinese or modern Chinese or classical Chinese or Sanskrit or any other language. Like she's really given us words that's like, oh, I've grown up with this. Oh, this word is really settling with me in a different way than, let's say, a word like recognition. I'm going to say truth, satya. Like it feels good to say that, but only now because I've said it for 20 years, right? But at the beginning, I remember like satya, satya. You know, like I was trying to learn how to say it. So just like recognition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And defining. Yeah. Defining it. So, I think I've for the majority of my life, really, this was modeled to me strongly when I was a kiddo, was recognizing people and giving, like expressing gratitude and honoring when people have contributed and truly validating. And, it's like these verbal rewards. It's like dessert for the ego.
Well, and you know how that also shows up as your friend, by the way, is that you model that. Like it always feels good, even when we're having like the really hard conversations that friends have, it mm-hmm. still always feels good to be in your presence because you model that. Mm-hmm. Recognition is not just recognizing all the lotuses and sunshine rays coming, you know, but like in our conversations, also recognizing, like we said this for a long time, like my poop, we said the other word stinks, you know, yeah. And that's also that recognition.
Totally. Totally. Thank you. Yes. And I am so grateful that I have you as a friend to be able to share that beautiful recognition, whether it's the amazing thing that Anani has done again and just blown my mind. It's like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. Or it's that thing that she said and it's just like, oh, that didn't feel good or that didn't smell right or whatever.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Recognition and like, oh my gosh, I just saw myself do this. And to have you be able to sit and hold and honor it and be present with it. This to me is the fundamental essence of true friendship. And it's not a gift that everyone I think has learned or has been blessed with. And I'm so grateful for it.
Oh, and I've learned so much from you because of the way you model it too. Right? Like your generosity is just part of who you are, right? Like, so one of these things we haven't even had this conversation, but almost a lot of these aspects of how she defines dignity can also be in many ways aspects of part of our being that come natural to us for some people. Like you might not have all 10 of them, but like for you, I would say this recognition piece is like, it's part of your DNA. I don't know that because I've only known you for the last 20 years or however long we've known each other, but
yeah,
that's always been something I've noticed. It's like, how giving you are. And when I say recognition, it might be an actual gift for no reason. You're like, ah, I saw this. I totally thought of you here. or it's in that recognition of, like you said, space and time to be ourselves, like our true selves. Mm-hmm. And so in many ways, I also wonder if there is a layering of like almost values that we're born with that some people naturally have more a tendency or a proclivity to versus other ones where you read the list and you're like, ooh, I could work on this and this and this, right? So it almost also becomes a way for us to do our own. And not that you need to be like an expert at all 10 of us, right? Like I know my learning mind wants to be like, ooh, I want to check these off. Like, okay, I'm good at that. Okay, I got this one. What's the next one I can work on? But perhaps also a way of recognizing is that each of us have our own strengths, even within this model.
Totally. Beautiful.
Well, I hadn't thought about it that way.
As you were speaking, I just had this other flash in my mind that it's another way of recognizing our own internal patterns, our samskaras. And recognizing, like coming to the mat and coming to these points gives us another view of, or another space to view. All right, where did that come from? Is that truly, is that recognition? There's so much to that, but is that orientation towards finding recognition in my daily life? Why is that showing up? How is that showing up? Where is that coming from? You know, there's always light and darkness in there too.
Yeah.
And is there also like, and I, cause I know this, like back in high school, I would be an overly gift giver because I didn't feel worthy. And then working through that and recognizing that, okay, well, here's what I want to keep and here's what I can let go of. And honestly, one of the hardest things I've had to do this year, I did a really deep dive 5-day silent meditation retreat. And one of the big messages was stop giving gifts. Just show up. And that recognition. So like I said, there's just all these layers to it. And there's right. things, of course, you're grateful for. And then if you allow yourself the time and the stillness and the presence on the mat or otherwise to listen to what might also be even a deeper level of self-acknowledgement and self-recognition. It's just.
Oh yeah. My gosh. Yeah. I so hear what you're saying about sometimes the things we do and other people, oh gosh, I'm going to cry here. I wasn't planning on crying today. Like I've had many of these moments this year of recognizing like, well, who would I be if I wasn't that way? Because my mom expects me to be this way. And my dad thinks I'm this way. My husband thinks I'm this way, but I'm realizing underneath it all that these were my defense mechanism. These were the things that made me feel worthy or made me feel safe or made me feel seen. Like coming back to these basic, like, who am I? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And it was terrifying to have those conversations. And I simply like asked my mom, I was like, Mom, if I told you I wasn't this way, would you still love me? And she was like laughing and just like, of course, you know, but I'm sitting there like trembling, waiting for her answer because I fully have lived this way for 40 years of my life that if I'm not this way, I won't have my mom's love, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what if I never become that doctor I said I was going to become? Will she still love me? Mm-hmm. And of course she was like, I can't believe you had to ask me that. And I'm like, And so I get that, Dee. Like it's really interesting how, and now that I say that, like, so even this aspect of me recognizing, like I said, it was part of your DNA, this aspect of recognition, you just threw that right back at me and said, well, hold up, Haunani. There's layers to this, right?
Epigenetics.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Play with the DNA analogy.
We'll have a whole nother conversation.
And oh. Yeah, truly.
I love you, girl.
I love you. Oh, I love that you set up this space. All right, so should we move on to the next
one? Yeah, please, please, yeah. And just for time's sake, where are you in time? Like, it's already 12. Oh, or I'm good. Sorry, it's not 12. Sorry, no, your time.
48 my time.
Yeah. Okay. You're good right now? Okay.
I'm good. Yeah. Yeah. How much time do you have?
Because I'm good. I don't have kids around today right now. Like I'm good. We can go for hours.
I need to brew some more tea, but I'm good.
Yeah.
So the next one I think really so poignant in our culture, fairness. And how fairness shows up. In ourselves and in how we are interacting with other people. And this is where I put this. I so appreciate the level of drive and passion that our country embodies with driven largely by capitalism and by just a competitive free market and the independence and the entrepreneurial spirit. I do genuinely have great reverence for those powerful driving forces. And I think they have allowed us to get way out of line with what is truly fair for everyone. Mm. There's, you can layer in there just a dependence on an unskilled labor pool and the obvious especially this past year, the obvious violations of our systems and how we deal with people. And while as an individual, we can say, well, of course I'm treating everyone fairly. This is where I think, for me at least, I need to spend some time in how has the environment that I have developed in conditioned me to not know how to be fair or know how to recognize fairness? Because the reality is we haven't been living in a fair society. Mm-mm. And I mean, truly, I don't know that we have seen, I don't know that I have seen how everyone has been treated fairly in a group. I don't know that I've ever seen that. Whether it's in school or you're going to have favoritism to someone, I don't know how I could see that unless there was an institution or a group of people who knew how to embody these 10 principles 100%, 100% of the time. And I just don't know if that's even humanly possible. So fairness to me, to truly treat everyone with equality, to never, never is a strong word, but to never favor someone else over another person. I don't even know. This may just be the horizon line that you never get to it, but the orientation is what's important. So
I love that you said that. At least the needle is pointing that way.
Whether
we get there or not.
I could easily never leave the house because of fear of never being able to live up to the fairness principle.
Right.
Right. And in interactions, there's an orientation towards you just do the best you can with what you have right now. And you're always orienting towards that direction. Because then as you progress and as you move, you're moving in that light.
That's really beautiful. Tad and I, my husband, Tad, but for those who know, this is probably the most common conversation we've had in the last 2 years. Mm. Is this idea of justice and equality for all. And what does that really mean?
Totally.
And can we get there? And, you know, he's a history buff. And so he will bring into examples of like leaders who had this in mind when they started their quote unquote revolution and or new idea for the new, whatever you want to call it, republic or this or whatever name they gave it. And it turned out to be a bloodshed. Or it turned out to be devastating, or it turned out to be good in one area, but totally awful in others. Wow. And so we don't actually have a model in anywhere in history that he can even think of.
Yeah.
Right. And for someone who he's like very earthy, grounded, I wouldn't call him a pessimist. Like he's very optimistic, totally. But comes from that really grounded area. It's kind of nice to also have that perspective because I don't hold on to history the way his brain does.
Right.
But I feel like my compass is pointed towards what we're talking about. Like, I was born with my compass turned in that direction. But then, like you say, it's really humbling to almost accept that. What if this is like what would that even look like? Because I agree. Like, I've never seen fairness 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's not embedded in the fabric of our reality. Truly. I think that there are plenty of elements of our culture that give us more biases than they do give us fairness. I mean,
ooh.
Our individual biases, I think this has definitely been a much stronger topic of conversation, at least in my bubble of podcasts and news media that I've been looking at are intrinsic biases and how it's important that we recognize that they are there and what they are rather than trying to say we don't have them.
Right.
That's just a lie.
Yeah, no, that's a lie. That's straight up a lie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't live in a vacuum, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we do even
just the magazines that you may or may not be naturally drawn to is an example of our inherent subconscious.
Yeah, of course. I'm much more inclined to listen to, with more depth and more presence, someone who I deem as interesting, intellectual, or have a perspective that I haven't listened to before that has more value to me, versus someone who seemingly just wants to talk to hear themselves talk. And yet, am I treating those people equally? Absolutely not. If I see someone who's more spouting off with their ego, and in my filtered mind, I'm thinking what this person's saying doesn't have any value to me, I'm not treating them equally as I am someone who's just gone through a horrendous experience and they're sharing something vulnerable. And this is where the, like, for me, the true sage orientation is, can I listen to that person who's just spouting off from their ego with the same depth and the same connection, with that same level of interest and intent, to be able to connect with them as I am the person who's just gone through something that I deem to be incredibly valuable? And this is, yeah. I mean, this is the Dalai Lama's on that.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Can I be as present in both? Is what
can I be as present in both? Because just the alchemy of our awareness and our presence, of course, changes the pool, changes the field.
Oh, absolutely. Changes, yeah.
Something,
yeah.
At least offers an environment for something to change. And the argument can absolutely be made that that person spouting off from their ego and just saying shit really needs something to change. Just as much as the person who's been violated in these 19 different ways or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Co-regulation, like, was just bringing in the how our nervous systems talk to each other in presence, and that co-regulated, like the breath that you were talking about at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Just being in the clinic space, you're modeling a certain presence that person stepping into can't help but, whether they're conscious of it and can put words to it, is different.
Mm-hmm. And we feel it, of course. This thing, I think of it as like being in a pool. And what color do I want to put in the pool? Of
course, oh, and then it spreads.
And then it spreads.
The food coloring spread. That's a, like a food coloring or a drop of something.
Totally. Yeah.
The ripple effect.
Yeah. Totally.
Oh, you know, you're just totally giving me this, like, this challenge. I hear the challenge, you know, because I'm a doer, I'm going to cross this off my list. But really, what I hear you asking, like, this is how I'm interpreting it, digesting it, is like, I am that person who is quick to listen, like you said, to someone who I deem worthy of listening to. Mm-hmm. I really just heard an inner calling when you were saying that for me to, like, that's my new practice. That's my new yoga mat, right? Is to turn on these other channels that I quickly turn off and really listen with the same ears of Ganesh, with those big, mindful, present ears. Oh, man. Okay, that's my new practice. Easier said than done.
Thank you. And that, like, I just think, like, what if we had a whole generation of people who knew how to really embody all of these principles, who knew how to listen with an open heart and also maintain their own energetic boundary and not get pulled into someone else's rhetoric or their own story, but genuinely hold their own presence and be there and listen as openly and as fully alive and connected and genuinely, yeah, in their own space. I see a lot of these intangible and some tangible atrocities just disappearing. They can't exist in an environment where we have cultivated ourselves in a way that allows for that genuine, strong, open heart, open mind, and fully present space.
I see it too. I feel it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, in my belief system, I know this exists on some level. It's part of my faith. Like I know that if I can dream it, it exists on some level. So what are the little ladders and hoops you have to jump through in order to actually, or not, to just experience it? And this isn't, it's not like turning a blind eye of like, well, I'm just not going to look at the things that cause me to see injustice and to see this. It's not a matter of turning a blind eye. For me, it's much more a matter of orienting towards how can I be in this space.
Actually, when we turn our blind eye, right, we're turning our back to something. When then you can't see it, and you can't open your heart to the pain and the suffering and all of the other stuff and the light and the beauty. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I know you, well, I think it's safe to say that you also agree to this, is that underlying all of this is all of our own desires, but not necessarily a desire from ego, but like a spiritual desire, a DNA desire to be seen, heard, and acknowledged just as I am, like as I'm here with my mess, with my lotus or not, like, and that's all we're all craving underneath.
Full acceptance.
Yeah. So can we have a generation, and hopefully they're being born, like hopefully they're already here, please. And if not, like at least we're taking the baby steps, like our compasses turned. Mm-hmm. And like, can you imagine? Mm-hmm. I'm getting teary-eyed thinking of Trace and Izzy, like living, being teenagers. Mm-hmm. In a space where they don't, where there's not as much angst. Mm-hmm. Right?
Totally.
Or is the angst needed? Like, is that part of this path of aligning? Is it? I don't know.
I think that my... I lean towards, there will always be challenges. There will always be things to struggle or things to, and not necessarily struggle against, but so I look at it like this. There's, of course, I played sports, playing volleyball. You can beat another team by totally exploiting their weaknesses mentally or physically. You can get in someone's head. And you can shut them down. And I've been on both sides of this. Or, and this is shows up in beach a lot, in beach volleyball versus six man indoor. Or you can play to the best of your ability. And you can raise the bar so that somebody else raises the bar, so that they raise the bar. So, and you can play as truly as like genuine friends. You can adore, you can celebrate somebody else getting an amazing ball, getting an amazing day, or having an amazing hit. And that there's a momentum to that energy. It's incredibly challenging. It's super fun. Or you can play where you are trying to exploit somebody's weaknesses with a different mindset of, I want to break you down because I want to dominate you.
Right. And
I see this playing out in social dynamics too. Like there's always going to be, we are, as humans, I think we're kind of wired towards getting to the top of that heap, right? We want to be top of the game. Maybe not everybody, but in this culture, it definitely supports that orientation of be a straight A student, be the best that you can be. And we can do that by denying other people resources, or we can do that by engaging in a discourse that truly elevates the bar for everybody. And I think this plays out in social dynamics in high schools with like who's in the cool group, whereas this is where it comes back to the principles of, if you are truly accepting each individual's identity, there are so many cool things to look at. Yeah. If you're truly treating everybody fairly, there's so many things to celebrate and to acknowledge. And then there's also like acknowledging like, that just doesn't sit with me well. I don't know why, but I don't like that. I don't want to be around that. And having the environment and the mentors and the modelers around you to say, all right, let's sit with this. Let's explore why. Are you in a place to be able? Do you feel safe to explore why you're having some type of discord with this? Because there's always going to be something underneath that. I think that there will always be those opportunities for challenge, for that edge to be found. What we have in our culture right now just offers ample opportunities to find that edge. It's a little too obvious. I'd love to see the level of nuance elevate. So, I would love to see that challenge of, I mean, what if everyone really knew viscerally how to embody the principles of dignity? I can almost guarantee life doesn't necessarily get a lot easier. It just gets more interesting with less harm.
Yeah, right. But the less harm piece is huge.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah, we evolve. So that's fairness.
What is that, number five? We're on 5 of 10.
That was number 7.
Okay.
This next one, this was hammered in me as a kiddo and I still work with it, but giving someone the benefit of the doubt. Benefit of the doubt. And I think this is where, there's an element of asteya to kind of go into the niyamas or the yamas with this non-stealing. Whereas, I'll give a scenario. So driving down the freeway and someone makes a reckless move and there's an instinct to either get angry at that person or to have some type of an emotional response, of course.
Yeah.
And think, what a jerk. What, he doesn't care about anybody else or whatever. There's an easy, a reactionary thoughts can flow through the mind. Giving someone the benefit of the doubt. My orientation has been, can I train my brain to say, well, maybe that person just got awful news and they are on their way to the hospital and they're about to spend the last few moments with someone or like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
There's a million different scenarios where like that person needed to make that move. Now, of course, if you see someone, there's going to be an inclination to identify that's a red hot rod Porsche, whatever, who's zipping in and out of lanes, whatever. But you can broaden that benefit of the doubt of, to me, it's that person is doing the best with what they have in the moment with all the tools that they have. And that's my easiest route to giving someone the benefit of the doubt versus labeling someone totally, I'll call it inappropriately, but just with our own instinctive biases. And while they may not necessarily be wrong, it's not helpful or useful to do that. So giving someone the benefit of the doubt, and this where I've struggled with this is, of course, in our culture where we have, I think it's easy for a lot of people to agree that there is institutional racism. There are biases towards heterosexual, white, affluent people. Given the context of our environment, always giving someone the benefit of the doubt, for me, has felt sometimes to be, well, I guess the question has been, am I bending over too much in this situation? Amen. Am I holding my ground in a way where I'm not allowing myself or my worth and my value to be leaked out? And this is a tricky environment because given the nuanced situations, and this, I think it'd be interesting to actually pose this to a group of people and say, like, have you been in an instance where you want to give someone the benefit of the doubt, but applying for the PPP loan, the guy on the phone that I've been talking to for 6 days, and he's asking for every document. I'm giving him every document. And every time he comes back, he's saying that I'm going to get less money and less money and less money. When my accountant on the other hand is saying, no, you should be getting more and more and more. Why is this guy? I have to ask, like, is there some type of biases here? What's going on? And then is it safe? Is it right to give this person the benefit of the doubt? There are many different contexts where I think that one gets a little tricky, where I would love to actually engage in a more of a sangha and more of a group conversation around. While it's important to explore that topic of being able to give someone the benefit of the doubt, where is it important to draw the line and say this doesn't feel right?
That's so funny. You said that right as you were saying, draw the line. My hand in my lap was going like this, because I was like, where do you draw the line of accountability?
Totally.
Right? Because there's altruism. And there's that, like, that light beam. And I can easily look past it and see. We've talked about this a lot. Like, it's almost like you can see the potential of someone, right? You see their light. You see their field of where it could be, but one of the practices of being present with someone is acknowledging where they are. And so in that same realm of, like, benefit of the doubt too, like, this is a huge one in terms of social messaging. Like, oh, this group of people will just be that group of people, right? You name it, like, boys will be boys. Or, oh, and I use this myself. Like, don't make me get Asian on you. Like, what the fuck does that even mean? But in my mind, that means something, you know, like, totally. I have to hold myself accountable. We have to hold each other accountable. And at the same time, that's that edge. It comes back to that edge that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Complacency versus growth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's one line, right? It's like, right? It's like a big, huge three-dimensional bubble in a blob, and it has dimension this way and height and
maybe it's even 4 or 5D. Yeah.
Can you imagine doing this level of work at National Conflict? I mean, you and I, we're in the coziness. Like, it's really, I love knowing that there's people out there at that high of a level also having these conversations.
And I hope they're continuing to have these conversations. Like, this is part of, I'll wrap up the rest of it, but I definitely want to talk more about where is this going and how can this be, like, what I'd love to see is businesses certified. And it's like an annual certification that we are involved in dignity training.
Yeah. Does she say that in her book? Like, certain schools have taken this on as their model of how they're going to structure their school, from the administration all the way down to how kids interact and how they lead their curriculum.
That's what I would love to see. Yeah, I would love to see. And I mean,
let's get through the rest of them. Let's get through the rest of them so then we can have that conversation.
Yes. Understanding. So truly taking the time and coming from a place of genuinely desiring to understand where someone's coming from. This takes time. And in our busy lives, I think it's easy to just dismiss or think that we know what someone is getting at or trying to say, or we just don't have time to, or we tell ourselves we don't have time to sit and to listen, to really come from a place of understanding. And similar to, I mean, all of these, I think, have to be met with a level of pragmatism and like a sense of realism, where you meet each one to the best of your ability for that day and that moment. And when you have time and you can dive into the ones that you know you want to spend more time with, you do. Understanding is a big one. Independence, giving people the freedom to have their own level of independence, which is huge, not creating dependencies.
Yes.
And always fostering. Being supportive, of course, but not clamping down on someone so that you're denying them their ability to be independent. And yeah, I think we're just waking up to that as a culture in a lot of different ways.
Oh my gosh, this is, I mean, that is such a, that in itself could point to so many of, as we were talking about, like, oh my gosh, a bald eagle just like swooped down over our house. Oh my God, that was beautiful. Thank you. That is our sign. There you go. And it's flying in the direction I kept pointing to. It's like, all right, that is our sign. Coming back to this concept of fairness, right? Or giving someone the benefit of the doubt when we have created lots of dependencies, like you said. Mm-hmm. And in an internal cry of wanting to, and mixed messaging, because also all the media messaging from commercials to magazines is all about like, be yourself, be independent, do it your own way, take this and brand it, you know, like it's, we come from these messagings that are like, be your own butterfly, and at the exact same time of, but in order to do that, you have to do our thing, and we create this dependency, and it's almost out of fear, right? Rather than like uplifting everyone and seeing everyone for their strength, and oh, like there are areas I need a lot of help. I would like to be able to go and get that support without being dependent on it. Like healthcare, like this is what I'm thinking in my mind is like. Yeah. Just being reintroduced to English commercials in America again this last year when we moved back. And I'm like, oh my gosh, all the commercials are pharma now.
Oh yeah.
Like, my kids know so many pharma names that I'm like, oh gosh, you're like reviewing for me. Thank you. I didn't know that. I've been out of the States for 4 years. Now I know all my meds again. Cause they're just like repeating them. They're like songs to them. They're jingles. Side effects, maybe. Blah, 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 blah. And to me, it comes to this conversation of, I think of my own personal family and how dependent many of them have become. In the name of wanting their independence. Mm-hmm. Like, if I want to continue to enjoy the things I want to do, okay, I will take that added pill and that added pill and that added pill if that means I get to go pick up my kid or travel to here. And I'm not saying like this is not a pro science, but I'm all science, you know, I'm all for good science talk here, but also creating a balance and holding ourselves responsible, even ourselves responsible for our own independence and not depending on someone to be there when I need it. Like you hope the ER is there when you need it, right? Like that's a dependence you hope to. Right. But at the same time, it's almost like the boy who cried wolf. Like if I can only have access to healthcare through that ER department, that's not a fair opportunity for healthcare,
and
right?
We're conditioning dependence.
And we're conditioning. Well, and for some people, like if that's their only access, we have to be okay with that and stop making it harder for people to get care they need or create other systems where the emergency room isn't the only place they can ever get help.
Right.
Totally. Right. Yeah. Oh God, this weaves into so many conversations just about like, we're talking about, we need to be just kind of sit in the mud for a bit and really look at all the different before we have, I always jump to the conversations of the growth. Right? That's a part of being, and that's part of our brains and how they function and, you know, being directed towards the light and the vision and being a visionary is you can't help but jump there. But again, like we just kind of really have to sit and really be real with what is this, all the knots, really. That's how it like,
totally.
The entanglements, right? Chinese medicine, there's that term, that entanglements. Like we're really sitting in the entanglements right now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Ay.
You and I have both shared a passion for empowerment.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I see this independence really playing a strong a strong role in the empowerment of individuals and encouraging what Donna Hicks says, encourage people to act on their own behalf so that they feel in control of their lives and experience a sense of hope and possibility. I love how eloquent that is.
Yeah, just come back to hope, just giving people that opportunity for hope again. When I started PCOM, I remember the first year I came home, like having this massive realization in class. I was like, we're learning all these techniques, but all we're really learning is how to create an environment for hope for people. Right? Like we spend a lot of money to create an environment of hope for people, whether it's through all these 18 million techniques.
And education and listening.
And our own privilege to be there and learn these.
Right. Yes.
And then, you know, what I hear myself saying is, have I stepped into that fully, or have I been like hoarding too much out of fear of the mess?
We are so connected. It's amazing.
No, I love you.
This is just, it's definitely been, it's the most difficult of the yamas to say. And it's been my sticking point. Aparigraha, am I saying it right?
I'm not a Sanskrit, that's how I say it. So I know what you're talking about, but.
And it's the hoarding. It's the, and I have definitely struggled with this, is that, man, I mean, we've been blessed and we've pursued so much knowledge that it feels that our culture is starved for. And in the self-immersion of this knowledge, like it is a very selfless orientation to be in this medicine, in this purposeful profession. And I struggle with feeling just the conditioning of, I grew up Catholic, that martyr more, I associate this with more like nurse orientation of give, 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 give until you're empty, 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 and still give some more. And the orientation of living this medicine, walking this path, this truth, is you give from a full cup. You fill yourself daily. And it doesn't have to mean that it's not necessarily monetarily, but it's not also ruling out money. It's not necessarily filling up on food too much, but it is also making sure that you're well nourished. Like, yeah. And there's a fine line of, for me, that just the whole environment of, I love having these conversations and I would love to share them more, because I do, I feel like I've just been I'm at a point where I've been so full, and not to say that I'm complete. There will be plenty more that I learn. I'm like in the neophyte stage of learning, I know. And yet I also feel so full of this content that now at this point in my stage, I feel like it's actually greedy to not be sharing and to be out enjoying, digesting this content with more people.
Yeah,
and learning how to do that in a way that really feels like it's valuable and beneficial. That's the new fun edge.
Well, you and I share that same place. That's why I wanted to just record one of these, because we've been talking about it for so long, right? And for me, it's literally, okay, what if, worst case scenario, no one listens to it?
Right.
We got to spend an hour and a half, 2 hours digesting and connecting and filling each other's cup.
Like, absolutely.
I had to get over that, because part of me, you know, we're dreamers. We come up with ideas daily. And then it's like, well, why do some fizzle and some don't? And this one was like not fizzling at all. And I realized, I was like, what you were saying is, I feel full. If I don't start getting this out somehow, I'm going to get in my own I'm going to become Frogwa. I'm going to be stuffed. I'm going to be like, someone's going to be like, for what? So I had to get over that hump of like, it has to be, you know, perfect or not. Like for me, that's where it comes from, is like, I want this control. And if it's going to come out, it's going to come out in this like perfect way. And yeah. 800 million people are going to download it and blah, blah. You know, it's like smack, 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 smack. Who cares? Just do it. Like, right. Enough, like entering into my enoughness, like that yin, like that really honoring part of I'm doing it because I want to be doing it. And I think it's beneficial. And mm-hmm. I don't know why I think that or even for who, but I just have to trust. I have to lean into that trust, that voice that has led me this far and has led me, and not just led me, it's also work and money and opportunity and all the things coming together. But all along, there's also a voice inside kind of like honing in on each of those choices. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this was one of them. And so like, if it's a matter of, you know, you're a, not many people who I've been interacting with recently know you, right? Because I'm not in San Diego anymore, but I know you're like, pretty San Diego famous in my book. You know, it's just one thing that I think people wouldn't know about you, but I do, is that you're an incredible writer. You have a way with words. Obviously you have a way with words, like just here speaking, but I've read your writing, you know, and I know you love writing.
Thank you.
Right?
Yes.
So I'm just, I guess I didn't mean to turn this into like a mini, like, coaching session, but I agree with you. Yes. Start sharing it, Dee. Like, yes.
Yes.
And I'm happy to host more of these and make it, get it on your calendar. Like, I'm your personal assistant, making sure it gets on your calendar to turn on Zoom and sit with you for an hour and a half. Like, this is going to be the highlight of probably my month. You know, it's like, yeah. The last time we were face to face with each other was back in Bahrain. That was like 2.5 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Oh, yes. Well, super, super grateful for this opportunity. And I'm so glad that you are, I know you will always be that fire behind me, lighting me up to do more.
Me too.
So appreciate it.
Maybe that's why we get along, is I think you're one of my fires. And
we know how to fire each other up.
We know how to fire each other up. Yeah.
For sure. So coming to the last point, which is like, so perfectly teed up, accountability.
Oh, we planned it, folks.
Totally. And we already touched on this earlier, but just, I think that accountability is definitely what is, on an individual level, probably one of the more difficult things. Well, I can't speak for everyone, of course, but I think it can be, it's easy to hold yourself accountable to things that you think are important. And, or it's easy for me to hold myself accountable to things that I think are important. And it's easy to let myself off the hook for things that I don't think are important. And this is also treating different aspects of our life with fairness, not just people, but having, you know, across the board fairness. And I know that this has definitely been my journey as a practitioner, of getting out of that mode, that martyr mode of you give because that person needs what you have more so than you need a break. And holding myself accountable to, while yes, that person does need what I have to give, I know if I don't take this lunch break right now, I'm not going to be able to give the third person that comes in the door who may really need my full presence. And that accountability has been one of my favorite challenges and edges to come up against, and one of the most difficult ones, because it's not a foreign concept for people to also receive from someone who is empty, but putting on the front that they've got plenty to offer. Mm-hmm. So But the truth, this is going back to that pool analogy of like, what am I putting in the pool? And in my pool analogy, when I deny myself something that I need, whether it's a sip of water or it's to sit down and just take a breather for 5 minutes, this may or may not land with you, but I'll notice that there's a drive to like, I can feel someone's energy just pulling me in to give, and I can have great clarity on what they need. And in the back, it's like a little whisper of like, I gotta go pee, need some water, I'm really hungry. Mm-hmm. And reconditioning myself to hold myself accountable to stop and give myself what I need before I give. And I mean, thank God I've created the luxury of working in my own practice where it's just me and the other person. But working in a multidimensional clinic where someone comes in with a question and someone else, and their email pops up and there's 19 other things that happen and the person's in there waiting. So there's, for me, the accountability piece in a very real way is, it's like the icing on the cake and it's the foundation at the same time, because it's easy to skip taking a sip.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes it's genuinely appropriate to, there's, of course, this is a homeostatic balance. It's not a, yes, you've met this level and you're just going to maintain that level all the time. There's ebbs and flows. Of course, I know you as a mother, Duck, can definitely relate to that. Right? You don't always get the optimal hours of sleep. You don't always get, and this is where, I mean, there are so many opportunities and areas of attention that just as our human physical bodies that we need. Quality nutrition, presence when you're cooking your meal optimally, quality hydration, breathing fully and deeply, that time for stillness, that time for study, that time for personal connection, that time to work, that time for play, that time for great rigorous exercise, that time for deep restorative rest and to have someone else actually give you attention. I mean, we could fill a whole month, and that's not even going to work and earning income, taking care of bills, taking care of the logistics and the pipe leak or whatever it is. So finding that homeostatic balance and holding yourself accountable with, I say, soft edges and orienting towards what it is that feels like it needs the most work.
That's really beautiful. I had this vision when you're sharing this accountability piece. Not that you need more projects at all, because I know that you were quite the visionary in your own, but I totally had this image of the yin and yang conversation. I think we may have started it here, but really looking at these 10 pieces again, really integrating. Right? There's not an optimal here. It's not like a straight line where it's either or, right? It's more that yin yang model of that feeding into each other. Yeah, that interdependence and how all of these interdependently create their own space.
And I think of it as dynamic balance.
Yeah.
Totally. That mutually engendering process.
Yeah.
And being able to really, honor that whole energetic balance of,
And for those who did not study Chinese medicine, that was very much filled with Chinese medicine. Yeah. That last two sentences. It's so funny that it sounds like we're speaking poetic, but we're actually speaking very much Chinese medicine talk in the moment.
Very pragmatic. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have a question for you. Can we do these more regularly?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Yes.
One of the things that I had in mind is after because I know you very well, or I know you as well as I do up to this point in my life. And not everyone here listening or watching at whatever point in the near or far future necessarily knows you. So I had this idea, and you totally have the right to say no to this, is that I had this idea of shouting out, calling it the quick round, where I will shout out like 10 really quick questions and you just answer like what is in the moment. Okay. Oh yay! I'm glad you're excited for this. That you're excited, but you're willing to do it. You can also say pass, right? Like this is fun, right? Like who is Jasana beside this amazing poetic goddess of wisdom? All right. So team tea or team coffee?
Tea.
All right. Would you rather be a fish or a bird?
Bird.
Team, I want to stop and have conversations about this, but I said quick round. Are you team ice cream or team froyo? Frozen yogurt.
Oh, froyo.
Oh, your favorite flavor then?
Oh, man. This is so
in the moment.
Mint chip.
Ah, me too, girl. Favorite outdoor activity?
Skiing.
Favorite indoor activity?
Yoga.
Oh yeah, I'm not. This is quick round. Okay, early riser. Yes, please or no, thank you.
Yes. Yes, please.
Favorite quote or inspiring saying at the moment?
See if I can remember it. Everything is energy. You match your vibration to what you want, and that is what you get. This is physics.
It's also Einstein. Chinese medicine. It's also Chinese medicine. Einstein. Dao De Jing. You essentially just summed up the Dao De Jing.
Yeah.
Love it. Thank you. What are you reading right now?
Oh,
it's probably 18 books, but which ones can you remember?
Between Heaven and Earth.
Ooh, that's on my list right here.
Yeah. It's nice. A good one.
It's nice. Really good one. Okay, what brings you hope?
Nature. The miraculous nature of nature.
Thank you so much for spending part of your day with me.
I loved this.